Good morning and welcome to the third and final day of the October term of the South Dakota Supreme Court being held here at South Dakota School of Mines Technology. We'd like to know if you can attend this morning following schools and the ones with high school representatives of the county courts, St. Thomas More High School, Sturgis High School. If you have not already had a chance to do so, we do have various publications available in the lobby. Copy of first one, court seal on, has a brief description of individual cases the court will consider in oral arguments this term, and also a little bit about us. The blue covered book gives you a short description of the South Dakota judicial system. And the gray covered book with our photo on the cover is a pictorial history of the South Dakota Supreme Court. It's our complimentary. Lobby. First case for oral argument this morning is State of South Dakota versus Rosa. State of South Dakota versus Stocker. Helen is represented by Patricia Archer, Assistant Attorney General, here represents the State of South Dakota. Happily, Rosa is Burgess, speaking 10 minutes is up here. Stocker is representing Robert. We have to help you with that. Havilland, attorney Sturgis, also speaking. Counsel, wish to fight me in 2 minutes left. All right. Tell me if you're safe.
Good morning, may it please the court. I'd like to start my presentation by first reciting the facts of this case, which really are not in dispute. On August 7th, 2001, Trooper Steve Marquardt, police on the patrol, was patrolling in the city of Sturgis during the 2001 motorcycle accident. He was behind a pickup driven by the defendant, Dan Wilson. He observed a left-hand turn without using signal. Because this was a violation of traffic laws, it's a traffic stop of the vehicle that approached Dale Rosa. We had him come back to the patrol car at some point during the encounter, obtain driver's license from him, ran him away. At some point, it's not clear from the record, but during this traffic stop, the computer check would come back clear. He issued a warning citation to Rosa for the traffic violation and gave him back his license. At that point, the traffic stop portion was complete, though the officer did not tell him he was free. Instead, he told him he was going to bring his drug dog around the vehicle and had Dale Rosa get out and stand in front of the patrol car while the officer went to the back of his patrol car, obtained his drug canine, and proceeded to the pickup where he ran it along. As he approached the cab of the pickup, alerted, indicated the presence of drugs.
So if he had told him he was free to leave, then State v. Ballard would be.
Well, I think, obviously, in State v. Ballard, that was part of the issue. Here, I think we have a unique issue that still, I think, still would be here.
So if we don't just make a statement, you're free to go, although we're finished with that part of it, you're saying it's different.
Given the unique additional circumstance in this case, I think this is a situation in
Ballard. Is that because we're at the rally?
No. It's because of the unique question that's being presented, I think it's a distinction.
But do you concede that at that point, at the point when he gave him the warning citation and they were at the back of the vehicle, even though he didn't tell him he was free to leave, that was the point at which he would have been free to leave? And the officer had no probable cause as of that time, did he?
I think the officer testified that he was not, in fact, free. At least that's the state's position. He was not really a vehicle. The officer was going to run that dog around the vehicle first.
But at that point, he had no more probable cause in relation to the initial stop.
That's correct, Your Honor. We You're not saying you have probable cause or reasonable suspicion.
So the question is whether or not you can continue to continue the proceeding at that point.
That's correct. And as the trial court eventually held, after the defendant filed their motion, well, I should add, nothing else for the audience's benefit, when the officer did the search, did find marijuana pipe, and controlled substance. The defendants moved to suppress that evidence. It was allegedly improper search, and the trial court suppressed evidence, obviously, why we're here today. The issue that the state has answered today is whether, in the absence of reasonable suspicion, a motorist's detention at a valid traffic stop can be momentarily extended for the purpose of his drug canine sniff, where the officer has canine experience. That is the key that the state's going to say. What we're saying, or what we're not saying, is that this is a reasonable suspicion case. You're not appealing that portion of the trial court's decision. You held there is insufficient reasonable suspicion in this case. Although the officer testified as to his suspicions, the trial court found it insufficient. What we're saying is that this involves a de minimis intrusion. These defendants were already validly stopped. Record as it exists for the court has testimony by the officer and findings by the court that the time is brief. In looking at the record below and based on my knowledge, I was involved in the case below, based on my knowledge of that, I am aware that there is a videotape and it is discernible from that what the time limit was.
All we know is it's 30 seconds.
It is brief, and I think the testimony of the officer, it's reasonable to infer that it was literally a matter of seconds and moments of testimony. He took immediately, you know, took the dog out of the control car. And that is discernible, but it's not in the record. The best that constructed from the record that I have found was the traffic stop occurred, I believe, at 7:09. And there are traffic citations in the record that the officer was writing a citation. I don't know exactly what the time frame there. Taken, I believe it's approximately total time for the entire. That's after the search and finding the coyote and writing the tickets.
Includes everything.
Oh no, I'm assuming this. Everything. That's at that point. I believe he wrote down the controlled substance. I'm not sure on that, but you know.
But the warning, you say it's the first thing that was given, warning citation.
Warning citation.
That would show what that would.
Frankly, I'm not sure, and I don't have a copy of the record, but I don't think warning citation is good. Yes, we are relying. In that case, it's United States versus $4,905 in American currency. It's $404. In that case, the driver was stopped for speeding. Traffic stop. The officer did the records check, back, and but before giving the papers back to the driver, the officer told him to. And get in the awarded research, potential discovery, or
in that case, did he check the license again? Warning citation, nothing there?
I don't.
At that point?
Yeah, I don't recall if there was a warning citation issued. I know he gave him back, or excuse me, had not quite given back, but he told the defendant that I'm going to run the drug dog. And so the court, the reported decision, does not contain any discussion of what the officer's suspicions may have been relating to the decision to run the dog around. And that court treated it as a non-reasonable suspicion case. The court recognized that in prior cases, said that, you know, once an officer is done with the traffic stop portion, it's either written a citation or given the driver an all clear, then the Fourth Amendment intercedes. At that point, the next sentence of the decision, though, points out the court's acknowledgement that line is drawn. It's artificial. In my opinion, it looks like the court is stepping away from that line, given the circumstances of this case. I think 404 case is analogous to the case. Although there's been some discussion by the briefs about the fact that in 404, he had not yet given back neighborhood. Therefore, it's factually different. And I think if you carefully read the court's analysis, it noted that normally a traffic stop is completed when you get back to neighborhood. But this circumstance, all practical purposes, the point that the traffic stop ended was when that officer told the defendant to run the dog around first. So in that case, he
asked us to adopt this rule from the circuit as I understand it. So that's good.
I believe Arkansas has, and Nebraska, I believe the Tennessee District Court that I could note in my not choose to adopt it, but at least not in the U.S. v. Page decision that I found. And its rationale for doing that is that, you know, acknowledged that the Eighth Circuit had adopted it, but it held that its own circuit, which it must follow its precedent, had not. The Sixth
what,
Circuit
what other not. States, other states or jurisdictions consider this precise question?
My review, Westlaw update, other jurisdictions have cited it, but not facts or law are not directly on point. It's either for another principle, 404, or it was in cases, an Ohio case, where it was totally a reasonable suspicion case. And it just kind of cited it as an add-on. But for this principle, I think definitely the district courts in Nebraska have, and the Court of Appeals in Arkansas has adopted it, and will be cases. If
we adopt this rule that you're asking us to do, which would allow individuals to maintain this case, saying
well, two ways I'd like to respond to that. First of all, obviously, I feel I need to focus on the case at hand, what's before the court at this point. I think the Fourth Amendment jurisprudence basically dictates that. And you look at Fourth Amendment cases on a case-by-case basis. Understanding that, of course, this decision may impact further stops, I think what I would also say is that the principle that we're urging as the condition that the dog must be immediately available. Now, what does immediate mean? You know, the Eighth Circuit didn't define it. Quick look at Blacks defines it as present, you know, right there. And I think that whether, I mean, I think that's the key. Whether dog is there in the patrolman's car, which is the facts that we have here, and I guess that's what I'm going to need the court to look at today. I don't know. And then the courts for the Fourth Amendment have never done a strict timeline. What's reasonable? And I guess I would ask the court.
What it really amounts to is if I have dog, citizens have no Fourth Amendment rights. But it equals president in this case.
No, absolutely not, Your Honor. And I respectfully would urge that we're really not asking the court to adopt anything other than traditional Fourth Amendment analysis. And that is, what's reasonable under the totality of the circumstances?
Is it reasonable to have a roadblock set up and just stopping every car that comes down the road and just walk around the car?
Well, and I don't know that that has ever been upheld, but...
So you're saying there has to be some basis to stop the car to begin with?
Right.
See that much? That they just can't set up a roadblock?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We are not talking about a situation where someone's driving down the road and an officer decides to stop them just for the sole purpose of running a roadblock.
There was a roadblock case once where it said it was a proper event, I believe, back in Indiana.
Yes.
They set it up for that.
That is correct. So we're not. That is not what we're advocating. And like I say, we're really defining this pretty narrowly. What we're saying is, you know, when you have a subject that's already stopped, valid traffic, his liberty interests have already been impacted. I mean, the traffic stop was valid. The detention while the officer is running the computer check and doing the preliminary questioning, writing the citation, that kind of thing, that's valid. He's already validly detained. His liberty interests have already been impacted. All we're asking is that this court consider the reasonableness of the officer's ability, once it's concluded that portion of it, drug dog around the minimus amount of time. And that's what the court uses as its explanation. This is the de minimis intrusion. And again, kind of just looking at Blacks.
But did the officer in this case testify that the reason that he did that was because he was rallying?
That was a portion of his suspicions that he gave, that he testified to. So he believed he had reasonable suspicion. Number one, it was the rally. This is an 18-year-old veteran, 18-year veteran of Highway Patrol. He knows that the increased drug usage at the rally. Number two, the vehicle was from Colorado, and the driver was from Colorado. This officer knew, based on his experience and training and law enforcement intelligence, that Colorado is a drug source state for the rally. And so, yes, those were factors that we happen to know in this case for the reasons that he decided in this particular case to run the rally. Courts are split. I mean, I think this case has been out so recently that I don't know that many jurisdictions have had an opportunity to look at this precise issue. I was aware of the Tennessee court. What we have here, number one, again, the state is not moving court to what we're asking is, don't establish this right line.
Why?
Okay. Well, I guess the overriding principle here, the reason that the court adopted it in 2004, the overriding governmental interest in illegal drugs, that this court believes that that is, is in fact a substantial and compelling interest, this is the reason. And when you...
Yeah, but we said in Ballard,
at 2 minutes,
that, you know, once you're done with what the reason was, that's it. And so, in this, you're saying here, is the only difference in that case. But, why even issue then, if you have this suspicion of what you're talking about, and you don't want a bright line, why even issue the citation? Why not just pursue it?
Well, warning ticket obviously.
So it isn't a fishing.
Well, certainly if you've done the dog sniff during the traffic stop, totally not subject to debate. It's appropriate to put the drug dog around during the traffic stop. And granted, you can't undo the extent of the time it takes to do the traffic stop portion of it. So what I'm saying is that these courts, back to answering your question, why should we adopt this? Is because there is a compelling governmental interest. And it's a de minimis intrusion that we now have persuasive authority in our jurisdiction that affirms it. That would be the reason. No, it's not controlling, but it is persuasive. And the Eighth Circuit has adopted and reaffirmed it, this principle. I believe the 4-4 decision was 3-0, other panels of the same court have adopted this principle.
You arguing that if this is Mrs. Brown, a 60-year-old woman who's going home from the grocery store with bags of groceries, and she forgets to put on her turn signal, and the officer stops her, he can get out of his car with his drug dog and ask her for her document information and run the dog around the car, and that's reasonable?
Saying, or he's completed the record check.
Right. I mean, right at the same time. I mean, when he goes up to the door, can he have the dog run around the car?
I think that's constitutionally permissible.
Even against Mrs. Brown, who's going home from the grocery store.
Well, under your facts, the officer at that point doesn't know who he's dealing with. But, that's part of this. I mean, even Mrs. Brown.
That's for the reason. Why is that the reason? Because if the officer were just as proficient as the dog at smelling out drugs, it's just an extra tool that he has that he can go around the car.
That's right, and even the courts have recognized it. You know, a dog sniff is just uniquely suited for this purpose. It's inintrusive. It takes very little time. This happens very quickly.
Then why don't we require the officer to do it with the dog the first time around? Instead of being in a position where the person is free to go, he thinks he can now drive down the road. He gets his warning citation, and he is free to go, except that the officer hasn't said it. And now they pull the dog out of the car.
I suspect, and I don't know if this is the only reason, but I suspect that part of the reason that dog handlers don't use their canines right away is number one. They don't know who they're dealing with. So I think their first encounter with this person, they're more concerned with the officers. So I suspect that is the reason why they don't take them immediately. And even during the course of the encounter, until they run that computer check, they don't know who they're dealing with. They don't know if they have, a killer with a warrant out on them sitting next to them. And I suspect that they're obviously, the situation with Mrs. Brown, 60-year-old Mrs. Brown with the groceries, that may not generate in the officer's mind a basis to run the dog around at all.
Your time has expired.
Can I ask one more question? So you're saying it's necessary for the officer to have some basis in his mind, some belief or some probable cause in order to run the dog around?
No, I don't. But what I'm saying is that as a practical matter, I think that that is.
Thank you.
And I think that as you.
Thank you, counsel. Ms. Thompson, you have 10 minutes. Oh, all right, thank you.
To begin with, members of the court, I do agree for the most part with the facts as the Assistant Attorney General has presented them. There are a few things I would just like to briefly bring out, and as pointed out by the court, we don't know how much time elapsed between the time the ticket was given Mr. De La Rosa and the time the drug dog search or scan, as we call it now, took place. All we know in the transcript, it says a brief period of time. We don't know how long that is. 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 3 minutes. We don't know, it's not the record.
So you're saying all you know is the citation, dated and time for that message.
That's
when the stop was.
That's the only time we know from the transcript. I didn't see that in the transcript. Perhaps I missed it, Justice. But there may be a notation on the citation, but there is nothing that shows us how long Mr. De La Rosa was detained after the citation was issued. Again, we don't know exactly what the time was. It just says in the record a brief time. The other thing I'd like to point out to the court is brought up is that the officer was questioned during the motions hearing, what reason did you have to continue to detain Mr. De La Rosa and the stalker? He was asked in depth, well, did you see any red eyes? Did you see any indication of intoxication? Did Mr. De La Rosa or the stalker make any, try to attack you or do anything? The officer said, no. The only two things he saw was, number one, Colorado license plate, Colorado driver. Two, it was the rally. That's the only two factors he took into mind detaining these people beyond the time in which the tickets were issued. That's the only two things.
Of course, I guess you say the facts aren't in dispute. So what counsel's been arguing to us is that we should adopt the Eighth Circuit rather than have a bright line. And because of what the Eighth Circuit said is that they inappropriately, under this Fourth Amendment jurisprudence, established something because they abandoned it because of the de minimis, as I understand it, intrusion. So that's what they're asking this court to do, to overturn the trial court. You understand that?
I understand.
Yeah. Okay. Now tell me, that's the real issue. What the officer testified to, there's no dispute. So what I want to know is, why do you say that this court should adopt that? Or maybe you don't feel it should.
I feel it should not adopt the de minimis standard set forth in federal case law. I point two things out to the court, actually three. One is our precedents in Ballard, most recently in Kenyon, which was about 35 days ago, all set forth the criteria for determining whether you can continue to detain a defendant during a traffic stop. Our test in this state is, was there a reasonable, articulable suspicion? That, in fact, in Ballard, in paragraph 19, this court looked at 404, and decided that based in Ballard, in paragraph 19, they said, this court said, that after the ticket has been issued, go.
Of course, this issue wasn't before us in that case.
It was not argued. That is
right.
Correct.
Well, Ballard was a case.
It is a little different facts, but again, if you accept their argument, the drug dog, the drug sniff, the drug scan is de minimis. So it shouldn't matter, because it's de minimis. if at the time the stop has not been completed, it's legally what you say, no, it's not a violation. Our property, our, in this case, obviously wasn't the case. In order for the highway patrol to do it properly, they, in my opinion, they should have no suspicion, but there's a reason. Drug dog, that is our criteria. Correct. Seizure of the defendant in order to do the drug search, I'll call it a scan. Is not the search of the after the Fourth Amendment. That's the Fourth Amendment.
So are you saying the officer would have been okay if he had not issued the warning citation, if he had just not filled it out yet, said, now you sit here in the passenger car and run the drug dog sniff?
He had not filled out, completed the stop, yes. Suspicion. It's a foot. The crime is a foot. Go ahead and search. But obviously, if there's no reason for suspicion, so you're done. I don't think that's a game. It's a game. It's a game. It's a game. It's a game.
The Fourth Amendment does not have any bright lines. It simply says, must be reasonable. Actually, it says the opposite. You gotta engage in reasonable searches and seizures. Since the Fourth Amendment itself is not in my history of this case.
I'm not asking this court to adopt it. I'm not saying it has to be. That's not what we're asking. What we are asking, let's set the criteria, keep it where it's at, and that is our past behavior. Suspicion. In other words, that's what we have to say. Reason.
Right line. Right line you're asking us to adopt. What's the trap? The traffic stops. That's it. Circumstances. That's the bright line.
Not under any circumstances.
2 minutes.
I'm saying if there's particular suspicion, yes.
Well, obviously, that we all understand this. If there are particular suspicion or reasonable suspicion,
that would be correct to the extent that they're offering. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Wouldn't you concede that drugs are a serious problem in this case?
Absolutely.
And here's here that they were detaining this individual longer than the time that he's been stops and uses the bathroom. Not very egregious.
And I would also argue drugs certainly are serious. Fourth Amendment, the Constitution is also very serious. It's also very serious. Again, what would be the criteria?
Right. The expectation
is great. I guess my question categorical question. What would be the standard? Allow drug dogs to bring to them. Obviously, law enforcement is not. Standard they would use. Officer's description. Profiling. I'm not saying there's racial profiling. Some profiling is considered a part of place. What will be the standard?
Your opposition has stated that the standard would be as long as it was immediate, as long as the dog was available. Of course, I'm not sure that's binding on the Attorney General's office in all the future cases in the state of South Dakota, but would you agree to that?
No, because, yes, if the dog's immediate, that certainly is a factor. What is the standard we use to call the dog in? It's the fact that it's immediate. It's the fact that officer discretion, I think I just want drug dog. That, I think, when I'm speaking of standards, that's what I'm saying.
Time is expired.
I noticed the last time I returned to the state of South Dakota from the state of Minnesota that there's a great big sign on the highway that said, you know, welcome to South Dakota. If you bring drugs to the state, you're going to stay a long time. Now, we're not debating the wisdom of that sign or anything, but doesn't that kind of put your clients on notice that, you know, they bring drugs into the state, they are on notice that they may stay a long time, and so therefore they're not, you know, they're not innocent in the sense that they had no idea.
What I would hate to have.
Whoa. Why don't you just do it?
There you go.
Thank you.
My concern with that is I don't want South Dakota to be the state. I am concerned with the officer's testimony in this case. Specifically, I feel, do we need to notify Colorado residents that in South Dakota, our officers feel that their state is a joint state to South Dakota? You're going to be on your street or something. And I think that's the unfortunate thing that I don't want to see happen. Talk about these drugs. I also think that the court pointed out the case of the city of Indianapolis where they did the roadblocks, where in that case they discussed the issue of weighing the extreme importance, obviously, of controlling the drug problem in this nation versus individuals. And in that case, they even stated that the individual rights can outweigh that objective of law enforcement. Looking at that case, I can quote the United States Supreme Court. It said, we cannot sanction stops justified only by the generalized and ever-present possibility that interrogation and inspection may reveal that any given motorist has committed some crime. They were not willing to extend
this. But in that case, isn't that where they just set it up on what they thought was a corridor?
Right.
And we don't have that here.
No, we don't have that here. But from a practical standpoint, we do have officers pulling people over on discretionary stops for failure to signal. And they are, the question is how far can they extend that in investigatory detention? That's the issue that we have here. We do have people being pulled over for very minor offenses who are being subjected to questionable violations of their other constitutional rights. Absolutely. Well, I don't expect them to ignore those violations. However, I'll be honest, do I think that they pull people over for traffic violations during the rally that they wouldn't want? Well, yes, and that's not necessarily what we talk about. But from my kind of trying to answer some questions that have been discussed, I don't necessarily think we're asking for game play. The courts have stated that regardless of whether that warning ticket is written out and handed to her, you know, it's not just is the ticket been written and handed. There is case law on, okay, what does a traffic violation amount to? What's the general investigation of an officer? And that is, generally they look at, they're going to run their license, registration, and they're going to possibly issue a ticket, a warning ticket. And so the question that that we have here is how much further beyond that can they extend that? I do think that the case law, the way it stands today, does make a distinction that if the officer runs the canine dog around the vehicle during what would generally be included in an investigatory stop for a traffic violation, it's not a constitutional violation. I would suggest to the court that the fine line not be whether that ticket has actually been granted, but rather the stop has been extended beyond what you would generally see in a traffic violation stop, in a stop for a traffic violation. In the particular cases that we're talking about, yes, the issue is once the traffic stop is completed, can they be detained longer for the canine sniff? The state obviously is relying very heavily on the 404 case. My concern with that is I'm not convinced even the Eighth Circuit has adopted that de minimis standard. If you do an analysis of the case law after the 1999 404 case, they still continue to do the reasonable suspicion analysis. They did it in U.S. v. LeBrun, which is a 2001 case. They did it in U.S. v. Morgan, a 2001 case. They did it U.S. v. Linkus in a 2002 case. In all of those cases, if the court had actually adopted this de minimis standard, 404, to me, I should read those cases and it should be a clear situation. We've said that a canine sniff is a de minimis sniff or a de minimis.
All those cases are cited.
Yes, I believe that they are. The only new one, and I don't believe the state made reference to it, although she did fax us to us, is the U.S. v. Gregory. That's a new 2002 case. And I'm not saying that they totally ignore 404, because they often cite to that case, but they certainly do not say, well, we don't need reasonable suspicion anymore at all, because we've set our standard of de minimis. In the Morgan case, in the very last paragraph, you'll see where they do make reference to the de minimis of 404. After they've already gone through and analyze the factors to determine whether there's reasonable suspicion. So even the Eighth Circuit seems to continue using that reasonable suspicion standard. And what I find interesting is if you look at footnote 6 then in Gregory, they actually distinguish the case of United States versus Beck, which is a reasonable suspicion case. And I'm certainly not denying, yes, that is exactly, the Justice, you're right, that's what it says. And then how can you figure out, how can you make footnote 6 fit in there? United States v. Beck is a reasonable suspicion case, and yes, in that case, they did not find reasonable suspicion. But if you read through that, especially the parentheses saying what Beck, that in Beck they say it concluded that an officer needed reasonable suspicion to extend a post-traffic stop detention because he had already concluded the portion of its investigation related to the traffic stop and had issued the warning ticket. That's exactly what we have here. That was the facts in Beck, and then they're distinguishing that. I'm confused even by the Eighth Circuit's case.
Well,
that's assuming that an officer has to specifically state those words that you are free to go. It has been recognized that an individual may feel free to go after being given the warning ticket, regardless of whether the officer has specifically stated to them, you're free to go. I would, you know, I'm not asking this court, and we're not, we don't want the court to make that distinction.
In this case, was your client the driver?
Yes, he was.
You have 2 minutes.
Was your client outside, that you got the warning ticket, was he outside the car? Had he been authorized to leave the vehicle?
I don't know if he had been authorized to leave. The officer himself in the motions hearing testified that his stop was complete at the time that he ran the canine dog around the vehicle.
At the end of the day, you must decide, aside from the other cases, it's unreasonable. Attention.
I believe that it is unreasonable for the court to conclude that, because we don't know what the facts of each individual case is going to be. And I think generally the Fourth Amendment cases have been decided on facts of the case. In State v. Kenyon, this court recognized again that you need to look at the totality of the circumstances. And I do not want the court have a holding in a case that says, okay, you can run the drug dog around the vehicle basically in any traffic stop. What that's going to amount to is running the drug dog around the vehicle is going to be just a standard procedure in any traffic stop. And the dog is not always going to be immediately available. And then I think we have the problem there where an individual who happens to be pulled over by an officer who has a dog has less rights than someone who gets pulled over by an officer without a dog. Because as the state has said, she's not asking for you to find that a person can be held while a drug dog is brought in. So how do we, that just, it seems like too much of a specific rule to me for this court to hold in a case. I'm not sure. Just from a practical standpoint, I think it's going to be extremely problematic if that's the finding. I think the better standard is the one that this court has recognized and other courts have recognized, is that, hey, this is a traffic stop. There's a generally recognized investigation that an officer is going to do in a traffic stop. If that amount of time has passed, he cannot bring that canine dog in unless he has some other reasonable suspicion.
Your time is expired.
Thank you.
Archer, you have 10 minutes.
Court adopt the state's position is that you do look at things in these cases. And I don't think the court can be too concerned about what might happen 2 cases down the road. Reasonable suspicion cases present facts each and every time. And I'm sure U.S. Court in Terry v. Ohio, when it was first considering start with, it's focusing on the issue at hand. I don't know the answer to that, and the courts don't know the answer to that. Even in the
well,
context.
You do know the answer to one thing, that if the officer has a dog with him, it's the luck of the draw, you're out.
Well, and again, what the state's advocating here is that the dog has to be immediately available, you know, and that means present, available at once, without delay. I mean, you know, almost contemporaneous, whatever that means. As far as the time aspect of it, the court is truly concerned about pinpointing exactly, you know, how many seconds transpired from the point the traffic stop ended, in this case, until the dog alerted, which then provided the problem. would ask the court to remand the trial court to make that finding. But I think the transcript as it exists indicates that it is brief, and I think there's a very reasonable inference that we're talking to a brief amount of time here.
Isn't that a little simplistic to suggest a brief on fair situations? This decision will be made in a certain court in the state. Rest assured, their facts will be different to the person that will be by our ruling facts, and it may be facts like Justice Cronin suggested, attendance, stopwatch, trying to figure out if this constitutional or not. So there's a lot at stake.
I understand that there is, and you know, the state is not treating Fourth Amendment constitutional rights like this case. What we're saying is that allow the trial courts to look at this on a basis of the totality of the circumstances, deciding at the trial court level what is reasonable. That's what the Fourth Amendment is all about. And you know, even the case law on reasonable suspicion, where we have people who are detained while they're waiting for a drug dog to come, that's based on reasonable suspicion. There's no magic timeline. I think the Bloomfield.
Why are you talking about totality of the circumstances? That was what the issue that was in Kenya. And looking at the individual who's driving down the Sioux City, I believe, on a hot summer night with long sleeves on, and also a corridor, and that was enough for the reasonable suspicion for the detention to get the dog there. But here, you don't even have to have any reason. You're saying this is not a reasonable suspicion case, and so there's just nothing there. Why do we have to worry about the totality of circumstances? The thing here is, to me, is you're saying the stop isn't over with and it's de minimis. We can go ahead. Is that what it amounts to?
The reason I'm saying that is because I believe the totality of the circumstances does still apply. Again, just read the text of the Constitution. It talks about unreasonable, you know, not subjecting people to unreasonable searches and seizures. And the only way we evaluate that jurisprudence is to look at the totality of circumstances.
The totality of circumstances, what you said, he's there, there's a stop, there's a dog, in the store.
And again,
isn't that what you said?
I did. And what we're coming back to is the dog immediately present, and wasn't a de minimis. And the courts have acknowledged this concept of de minimis. And again, under Flax, what it basically means is it's so small that the law doesn't take notice of it. So it's not like this is a great constitutional violation just because we crossed the line, if you will, of this traffic stop. The courts repeatedly in the past, including this court, have recognized Fourth Amendment jurisprudence. There are times going to allow this additional, the term is used, minimal intrusion in these people's lives because of this overwhelming governmental interest. This court did it in Hodges, the traffic stop of a driver, a passenger jumped out and starts running into a local casino. The court held that officer had the right to order that passenger to stay in that vehicle, even though he had absolutely no reasonable suspicion any activity on her part. No, but I think it sheds light on the fact that this court has recognized suspicionless detentions of citizens in the absence of reasonable suspicion when they're minimal and when there's an overriding governmental interest. I think the question was posed by Mr. Cable, what will the standard back to your point, Justice Robinson. The state is not advocating a free fall. What we're just saying is we have a subject who is already stopped, his liberty interests have already been impacted. We're not talking about the drug checkpoint stop that was, you know, discussed in the Indianapolis case, that we stopped him solely for that purpose. I'm saying we've got a subject who is already stopped validly constitutionally, just asking this court to say it is reasonable under the Constitution, under the persuasive authority in our jurisdiction to detain that subject momentarily for the purpose of this very inobtrusive investigative procedure where that dog is. The cases talked about by Ms. Thompson.
Actually, I don't know. What do you think?
Again.
Or would that have to be the case we'd look at or another case take into consideration? I won't be here probably to do it.
I understand. I mean, I know it's nice and people want to have a magic line that they can draw. But even, you know, even in cases in which reasonable suspicion has been discussed, what time is allowable to call for a drug dog? That's when they have to call for. Eighth Circuit case in Bloomfield, that 90 minutes was okay. You know, other cases have held, you know, so there's no magic timeline. You say, okay, 90 minutes is okay, but 91 is not. The courts are reluctant to do that.
You have 2 minutes.
And I guess I'm not in a position to say today that I know what the magic number would be. But I certainly think in this particular case that it falls. It was, and clearly no. And the only reason I was talking about Bloomfield was to demonstrate that yes, under the reasonable suspicion types of analyses, time limits become a factor. But the courts have repeatedly held that you know you can't set a rigid time limit. I think that situation that's presented in other cases, such as checkpoint cases, which have been upheld, where people are detained momentarily. I don't know if they even have time limits given in those, with no suspicion, individualized suspicion whatsoever, would support state's
what bothers me about your use of Hodges is in Hodges we held that the officer had the right to freeze the situation during a proper stop under which he had articulable suspicion. But what you're arguing here for here today is something different because here, objectively, it appears to me that the stop is over and yet he's just continuing it. So he may have had the right to say freeze the situation, freeze the status quo as far as, say, the passenger was concerned or the driver. During the period of the stop, once the stop is over, I think under Ballard and under Kenyon, I think the situation changes. So,
well,
isn't that a proper application of Hodges?
The way I look at Hodges is there was reasonable suspicion as to that driver that criminalized traffic violation. There's absolutely no reasonable suspicion as to the passenger.
Right.
And
would it have made any difference if the officer had interviewed the driver and then said, okay, you're free to go, and then the person, the passenger, got out of the car and went into the casino, presumably to go to the bathroom or whatever, the officer would have had no right to stop.
Again, if you look at the court's analysis and the rationale for Hodges and the rationale for allowing that officer to freeze the situation was the overwhelming governmental interest in officer safety. I don't think that dissipated, would have dissipated even if the officer had discussing the driver.
Well, then you're kind of arguing that you're never free to go. I mean, could have been 5 minutes later and they went up, parked at the casino, or 10 minutes later, or they came out of the casino and they started to drive away. They're going to stop at another place.
You are saying you agree with the dissent.
I understand your position in the dissent. What I'm saying, obviously, I'm familiar with Hodges for you last time on that. But I'm just saying that this court, the majority, did hold that the suspicion was detention. And I think it is analogous.
It wasn't a case involving the driver, it was the passenger, and it wasn't the driver. This is a case.
Right. And factually, the case is just similar. But the principle, I think, does apply.
Your time is expired.
Thank you, Your Honor. That reason, the state would ask that the court reverse the trial court.
Thank you. Before we recess, I should note for the audience that third case scheduled for today, the public entity pool versus Tamara Wagaman, is going to have to be rescheduled probably to the November term. There was a death in the family of one of the attorneys in the pool was today. So we will take a 10-minute break, come back and hear Burkhart versus Lilla Hogg, and that will then complete the oral arguments for this term. We will be in recess for 10 minutes.